Very good afternoon to all brothers and sisters in the Dhamma. Exactly 3 p.m. So we can start our class. Today is Sunday, 7th of November 2021. So we'll be continuing our sharing from this book. Lesson 55, Sutra of Infinite Meaning, dated 24th June 2021. We are at page 36. Okay, we are at 3.2.7. Directly pointing to the true mind. So this is a very important understanding in cultivation. If you fail to understand that you have two minds, one is the commonly misunderstood mundane mind, thinking mind, or what they call the chattering mind. Compared to the other one, which can only arise when the thinking stops, when the chattering stops, when the mundane activity of the mundane mind stops, then the true mind arises. So this true mind is the beginning of meditation. You have to realize this silent mind, which is your true mind, and also the meditative mind. If you cannot stay with this mind, you cannot be mindful, you cannot be aware, you cannot be heedful, and you cannot meditate, because you cannot understand what is going on. You cannot observe, you cannot see things as they are. Your mundane mind will be too active, thinking, reacting, stirring. Because this mundane mind, if you don't understand, basically is the mind that accumulates all of your experiences, good and bad. And these experiences that is accumulated, they form your views, opinion, and conditioning. Also your belief system. And everything that you hold on to, your past hurt, your scars of memory, your fear, your worry, your selfishness, your insecurity, all these are part of memory. And when you don't understand what memory is, it can create delusion in you. It can make you believe that all these are real, all these are true. That's why without this understanding, you can never awaken to the truth, to the Dhamma that the Buddha teach. So today, this afternoon, we are going to discuss this very important sharing, directly pointing to the true one. So it was initiated by Brother Song. I continue to watch the video with Six Patriarch Winning short video these few days, and realize that the conversation of Six Patriarch is incredibly good and profound, simple and direct, pointing to the true mind. This one, the Mandarin word is 自此人心啊. Where is mommy? 自此人心啊. So pointing directly to the true mind. Then I commented, I said, yes, he bypassed Master Hui Ning when he taught. He bypassed all of the Theravada type of initial teachings and cultivation involving methods and techniques and mundane Dhamma by pointing directly to his first hallmark of Wu Nian. Wu Nian means no thought, cultivation. You must realize your true mind, which is without thought. Without thought, that is your true mind. Then meditate with your true mind. And nobody can teach you like that. That is why Prasva, only Hui Ning teaches that way. He takes you direct to the true mind, the self nature. That's why his way is so direct and very penetrative. And he bypassed all the so-called initial teaching, because the initial teachings of the Theravada tradition that teaches the essential Dhamma and all those things are so beautiful, so meaningful, but they are all mostly thought-based, thought and knowledge-based Dhamma. That one needs reflection, contemplation, and an inquiry to stabilize the understanding. Finally, to awaken, you need a turning cultivation. You must silence everything to insight into phenomena to awaken. Because without mindfulness, without realizing the true mind, you cannot meditate, you cannot awaken, you cannot understand. That's why his three cultivation hallmark of no thought, no mind, and no dwelling, Wu Nian, Wu Xiang, Wu Zhu, or Hui Ning, are incredibly beautiful. After you have penetrated the no thought stage to realize the true mind, then only you can develop the daily mindfulness, the silent mind, to develop the higher wisdom, to realize the no mark stage. That is, no mark of a self cultivating, no mark of others, and no mark of life, existence, and Dhamma, which are very profound teachings. It is not easy to develop understanding of this such teaching. You must realize true emptiness to realize the no mark, the 12 links of Paticca-samuppada and all those related understanding, of course. The silent mind that observes and comes to understand, like I explained earlier on before we start the class, at the beginning of today's sharing, you must understand the whole thing very clearly, and then the teachings become so different. So this was based on the initial pre-class meditative sharing. So that one you go back and listen to it again. After you can clear the no-mind stage, you are really very different by then. Your cultivation is already very advanced. Then to reach the stage of no dwelling is also not easy. You need to go the bodhisattva way for the mundane mind to collapse. It's also not easy. You need to have parami and all those understanding. But do not worry. All this can happen, except it depends on the individual's cultivation, their understanding, their perseverance, their sincerity, trust and faith. So these are the three things that are very important. Your faith, your sincerity and perseverance. Then of course, there is also the fourth, your understanding. Faith is very important. So all these are very beautiful, very meaningful. More and more kayamitas are moving into this direction of cultivation. That is why my sharing nowadays, I also realize I'm going to all this in a different and deeper manner. Then all the explanation that I developed and explain now are quite easy to understand because there is a lot of clarity. Basically, most of us have already developed the initial basic understanding, stability of mindfulness and cultivation to have the condition to receive all this type of teaching or such teaching. All this will prepare you for the next retreat. The next retreat is going to be very beautiful and a lot of things are going to happen. Then I say very good and salute to you, Brother Song, for creating the condition for such sharing. Then we move on to the next subsection. 3.2.8 with the heading, thought-based knowledge is not wisdom. So this one you have to bear in mind. A lot of people fail to understand this. There is a big difference between what is knowledge and what is wisdom. Initially, most people will learn the Buddhist teaching through knowledge, through the thought process, through reading, reflection, contemplation, and also maybe committing to memories. When it's at the knowledge level, you can't really make use of it. You can't really apply the teaching. That's why after you have studied the teaching, which is pariyatti, you have to move on to the second phase of cultivation, which is paripatti. You have to put the teaching or dhamma into cultivation. Then after that, we have the third phase of dhamma, which is pativeda. By the time you put into practice, you will realize the enlightenment. Then the third phase of dhamma is the fruition of your hard work. After you have realized the wisdom, the understanding, then you can leave that third phase of dhamma, which is the life of enlightened being. So these are all connected. So now I will continue from the sharing. So Brother Song continued by saying, I recently came to realize, even after having attended Brother Teo's explanation of the Six Patriarch Platform Sutra classes in the early years, the understanding was still mainly at the intellectual and contemplative level. However, this time around, when I watched Master Hui Ning's Six Patriarch short video clips, conversation again, especially Hui Ning's explanation, the understanding is so different. It is now so much clearer and very direct, and like I could fully understand its deep meaning. The disciple of Sun Siu who came to share and ask Hui Ning question had not realized their true mind. They were caught in thought-based meditation because their mundane mind are highly active doing and creating dualities. Therefore, giving rise to a lot of thought-based questions, they use thought, which are limited and egoic, to reason and analyze a situation or a problem based on their limited views, opinion, and conditioning. So this is a very important understanding. When you start your cultivation, you must not fall into this trap. Because most people, even after they have progressed to a certain stage, they go back to their old way of using thought to reason and to analyze. Why like that? Because when you cultivate Dhamma, you're supposed to silence your mind to realize the true mind and use it to meditate, to observe, to insight into phenomena, to awaken. Not to use thought, because thought being an instrument that is limited cannot realize a state of enlightenment that is beyond thought, beyond mind. So if you use thought to reason and to analyze, it becomes thought-based activity. Then you cannot be in the state of stillness, awareness, to observe, to awaken, to insight into phenomena, to realize the truth. So basically, when you understand this, you will not analyze. You will not try to reason why like that. No meaning. You need to develop awakening under the moment you awaken and understand, then the question ceases to be. You will answer the question by yourself, because question arise due to lack of understanding. When you don't understand, you will have doubt. When you have doubt, you will have question. But this doesn't mean you cannot ask proper relevant question pertaining to the Dhamma, to the truth. What I want you to understand is you should avoid the habit of reasoning or analyzing a situation, because all this will end up with duality of views, opinion, and conditioning. It is not going to give you wisdom, insight. No amount of analysis or reasoning can awaken the mind. Maybe it can give you more knowledge, more refined views and opinion of things, but it's still what your thought tells you. It is still a conditioning, a belief system, a memory. So all this, the cultivator must realize, then you will move away from unnecessarily reasoning and analysis. But to inquire, to reflect, to contemplate is good, because this is cultivation, second turning. But not to actively use thought to reason and analyze, then it becomes thinking. It's not contemplation, it's not reflection. You are not with the silent creative mind to reflect, to contemplate. You are actively thinking. When you're actively thinking, you are preoccupied in the thought process. Then you are very heedlessly and busily using your memories, views, opinion, and conditioning to act, to look at things. That's why it's not wisdom. Wisdom is not from memory. Wisdom is an understanding that you have awakened to, and it is there if you have it. If you don't have it, you don't have it. Means you only have knowledge. So when you cultivate, you will go through this phase and develop clear understanding. Okay, I will read on that. Then I explain further to Brother Song. I say, when since you taught the Noble Eightfold Path, it was all thought-based, because these are traditional teachings. That is why when the Six Patriarchs during the exchanges with one of his disciples asked, how do your teacher sense you teach you? The disciple replied, my teacher says, morality is abstaining from doing evil. Samadhi is concentration of mind, and wisdom is to purify one's own mind. So you look at this teaching. What do you realize? What can you understand out of this? It's very reasonable, isn't it? Like logical, isn't it? Especially the first sentence. Morality is abstaining from doing evil. Sila is what? Keep present. Abstaining from all evil. That's why avoid all evil. Then the second one is what? He said, Samadhi is concentration. So here there is some confusion. Because most people cannot keep their mind calm, tranquil, still. So they feel that they need an object of meditation to concentrate or to focus or to get them into absorption, one-pointedness. Then only the mind becomes calm, peaceful, and unwavering. But the true samadhi, which is the collected mind, which is unwavering, doesn't come about through a conditioned state of focusing or absorption or concentration. Samadhi is a natural state of awareness that has stabilized. When you are aware without thought for a continuous period, that is stabilized. Then this mind becomes like aware, collected, unwavering. Means when it sees something, hears something, smell, taste, tactile, feel, or think, it does not spur and react like last time. Yeah, it's collected. It's unwavering. So at the moment of sense experience, it can still have the samadhi to see things as they are. It's not distracted. It does not spur. It does not react. The habitual tendency does not come out. That is real samadhi. So here, again, the teaching is knowledge-based. It is very popular in the Buddhist fraternity where they teach samadhi as concentration. Even the Theravada tradition saying they believe the four form jhana and the four formless jhana are what samadhi is. If that is the case, the Buddha would have termed the perfecter instead of samadhi, samajhana. But why didn't he use it? He instead used another word. So it's obviously not concentration. Then the third part is wisdom. So according to Sun Tzu, he said wisdom is to purify one's mind, which is the advice of the Buddha. Avoid all evil, do good, purify the mind. But this samadhi is part of Noble Eightfold Path. Morality, samadhi, and wisdom is sila, samadhi, and panya. So Sun Tzu teach true knowledge. And this one, you will find it very difficult to awaken, because this thought-based knowledge can only give you knowledge, not true wisdom or understanding. So knowledge cannot free you. That's why you must put it into practice, realize the truth, and awaken. Before that, there is no way. So the disciple of Sun Tzu was taught morality is abstaining from doing evil, samadhi is concentration of mind, and wisdom is to purify one's mind. But how to do it? Not taught, because it's knowledge-based. Then after that, the sixth patriarch answered. He said, no. The real Noble Eightfold Path, which is sila, samadhi, and panya, is not the way that has been explained. It has nothing to do with all those explanations that your teacher taught. So the disciple was shocked when told what they have learned is Dhamma knowledge developed through thought-based cultivation, not the profound teaching from the self nature. As I went after that, he explained. He said the profound true teachings of Noble Eightfold Path is very different. The right view is based on a penetrative understanding and awakening, developed from the three hallmarks of winning. You must at least clear the first hallmark of no thought union. Otherwise, you cannot have the direct seeing leading to the right understanding or right view. And when you have the right view, it is not about how to continue to arise right thought, right speech, and right action. All these are still the initial cultivation. Without a stable sati, wisdom, and stability of understanding, the Noble Eightfold Path cannot become a part of you. You cannot have the embodiment of all the Noble Eightfold Path factor. You need the initial wisdom, the yoniso unasikara, born of the direct seeing, and wisdom born of direct insight into phenomena. When that one arises, then naturally the four right effort can fall into place. When the third turning wisdom leading to awakening arises, the wisdom will prompt you at every moment of sense experience. Then you will know what the Buddha meant by yoniso unasikara after that. That initial wisdom must be there, whereas what Sun Tzu taught them is to use memory and Dhamma knowledge. They are taught reasoning and analysis to try to overcome their defilements and solve their problem. All the explanation given are thought-based. That is why Huineng said, if you cultivate that way, you are wasting your time. You cannot awaken. You have to silence your mind to observe, to understand, to awaken. Then only all this become possible. Then you must reflect, contemplate until your understanding is very stable. Then from inside at the heart area, it will come out to prompt you. The whole understanding of the awakening is so different. So if you cannot understand how the real awakening arises, how can you teach people? You can't. There is no way. You will be stuck in knowledge and thought-based practices, coming out with teachings that are logical and interesting, but not from the direct seeing, awakening, etc. So understanding the cultivation is especially important when you meditate. So understanding the cultivation is especially important, full stop. When you meditate without understanding, it will not lead to awakening. It will make one gullible and lead one to thought-based and knowledge-based dhamma. So realizing the true mind, the silent mind, is paramount, most important, and a prerequisite to meditate. That is why you must have sati. Then stabilize the sati to become ever mindful. Realize the true mind, the silent mind. Then from there, develop heedfulness. This is the reason why Huineng explained, the Dhamma I teach or speak of does not depart from the self nature. For to depart from the self nature in explaining the Dhamma is to speak of muck and continuously confuse the cultivators. You should come to realize that all Dhamma arise from the self nature. And this is the two, Sila, Samadhi, and Panya. Listen to my verse. And now you go through this, you will know why Sensu doesn't have the understanding yet. Huineng say, my ground without evil implies self nature's morality. Do you see the difference between sensuous knowledge or thought-based explanation where he say morality or sila is to avoid all evil? So here he talked about our mind ground, means your mundane mind, your thinking mind, without evil. So the absence of evil is naturally without evil. Good. So how to develop that? You have to train yourself until the mind ground is without evil. And that only implies self-nature's morality. You cannot reach that state of cultivation. There is no sila in you. That's why today Sui sent out a short video clip on pure merits and tinted merit. That is the meaning. Tinted means whatever you think is good or meritorious. But if the mind that generates that good behind is egoic, then it's tinted merit. So sometimes you do good, but the intention is what? Out of what? For the merits. So there is greed behind, even though very subtle, for the merit, which is actually not bad. But for a true cultivator, that itself is greed. You should reach a stage of understanding where you do it naturally. When there is condition to do, you just manifest and do. You don't purposely go and do because behind your doing is the greed or merits. These are tinted merits, not pure merits. Pure merit is your mind ground is completely without the evil roots of greed, hatred and delusion, means not tinted by anything. tempted by anything. So all this shows the big difference. Then when he explains samadhi, he also explained it very well. He said, my ground that is composed, still and without confusion. You realize, Hui Ning never used the word concentration. Never used the word one-pointedness. This is real samadhi. Composed, still and without confusion. Means, without doubt, without wrong view, without any sankhara activity. Implies self nature samadhi, means your awareness nature, when you can stay at the true mind, no thought. That is samadhi. That's why it's so different. Then the third one is wisdom. What is wisdom? Not just generally purifying the mind. To Hui Ning, mind ground without delusion means your mundane mind, your thinking mind, when it's rooted out of the three evil roots, implies self nature's wisdom, means that yoniso manasikara, the wisdom, is already connected to this mundane mind. And because it's connected, it will prompt you. That's why it will not be deluded anymore. So mind ground with that wisdom is without delusion. That is the real panya, wisdom. Not the other type, where you try to purify your mind. How did sense you do it? Through his poem, you know that. What did sense you say? Our mind is like a mirror bright on a stand. Polish it until it shines so that no dust can align. What is that type of doing? He cling on to the wholesome. He doesn't want the dust, the defilement. So he ever mindful, keep on polishing the mundane mind, thinking that mundane mind that reflecting is a mirror on the stand. So he always stay there. Yeah. How can you cultivate in that way? If you do that, you will be exhausted and you cannot develop wisdom because you are clinging on to the duality of good, wholesome. Not understanding that duality arises when you start to divide through one, through your thought process, through words, through concept, through ideology, views and opinion. When you create one side of the duality, automatically the other side manifests. So duality pertains to the mundane mind, pertains to the conditioned world. It is not the truth. The truth is, reality is suchness. People are just the way they are. No right, no wrong. Whatever arises, there are causes and conditions behind. So this understanding, Sensio doesn't understand. That's why he is trapped. That's why I continue, then you understand. I do not blame the Theravada tradition and the other Buddhist tradition for all this lack of understanding, because the emphasis is traditionally on memorizing the sutra. So this memorizing the sutra comes from the Theravada tradition. Chanting and doing all those thought-based sitting, walking, noting, focusing and concentration via various methods and techniques, then repeating all that, thinking those activities are meditation. All these are very mechanical, repetitive practices involving thought, and it will make the mind dull and rigid. At that time, there was no writing, and it has been this way for so long, and they depended heavily on commentaries. Then over the years, the teaching has become distorted. The true teaching is no longer taught by the enlightened beings. by enlightened beings. That is why you need the real cultivators of the way who have the awakening to really bring back the authentic, penetrative teaching to teach and share the true Dhamma. That is the reason why initially when I wanted to come out to share, I find it difficult to teach you all because you all are so conditioned by all the various Theravada traditions, method, technique, and way of teaching, the sutra text, and commentary-based teachings. Whereas the true understanding is from the silent mind, the true mind, the awareness nature within. And I do not know why the meaning of sati is also not explained to people in a clear manner. That one, I think, maybe over the years, it must have been lost. When they translate to another language, it becomes more difficult. At least when Bodhidharma brought the teaching over to China, that one is still incredibly good and authentic. In the Mahayana tradition, they know what that sati is. Zhen Nian, they use the Mandarin word, Zhen Nian. I believe a lot of Zen traditions, they do know what daily mindfulness is, what the awareness nature is, what that true nature is. But the real teacher who has such understanding, transformation and realization may not be that many nowadays. Maybe only the patriarchs and their close disciples. That is why this type of teaching is not easy to come by. So what we have developed over the years are incredibly beautiful, especially now with our website, the short video, the transcribed books, and the various other valuable sharing. All these are going to help future generation and a lot of kilometers. If you can sincerely spend time listening to all this, you can awaken. Try to write it down, what I say, write it down, and read through it again. Sometimes you may think you know, because when you listen, the words are there for you to follow. That is as if it is incredibly beautiful, the Dhamma. But when you close the book, or do not refer to anything, just listen. You realize you cannot remember that your wisdom is still not stable yet. There is understanding, but it is not stable yet. So you need to write it down somewhere. Then the meaning can stand out and become incredibly beautiful. All this understanding that my nature and other true cultivator went through can arise is because we have cultivated them for exceptionally long time or periods. Then when we share, it just come out straight from the heart, naturally. Then when you listen, it's like quite simple, quite easy, where everything has been summarized and clearly laid out. But when you write it down, the understanding is clearer. That is why the transcript is useful and good. You read the transcript and you realize all these are so beautiful. And that is why today's sharing, if you can do the transcript, is going to be incredibly beautiful. Especially my earlier explanation. I realized this adapted verse sharing from this low essence of infinite. So far, there is no transcript yet. So if you all have the time and have the interest, you should start with this recording. Because today's sharing is incredibly good. Okay, Brother Song, you can continue. I do not want to take up so much of your time. Then we move on to the next sharing, 3.2.9. Clarity of dual mind, the true mind and the mundane mind. Brother Song shared that the understanding of this path must be clear. If it were the old me in the past, I would immediately ask about my experience. Why like that? I would ask Brother Theo, and Brother Theo would say, it's still from the thought that wants to know. During that time, there were lots of effort to cultivate, and I only realized that recently I could truly differentiate between the two minds. Thought wants to know why, and many whys the past. The question of why were amazingly fast, and this habitual tendency would take over to stir the mundane mind. This is what Brother Song realized, which is very good. And a lot of cultivators are trapped at the thought level through analysis and reasoning. Then I explained, that is the basic mistake of cultivator, because they do not know how to differentiate between the two minds. They always go back to the mundane mind, which has the memories, the views, the opinion, the conditioning, and the habitual tendency and thinking, and scars of memory, etc. And acting according to all this are thought-based action, born of accumulated memories, because they are not wisdom, born of the direct seeing, by the silent mind or true mind. That is why I always tell you all, that is from the thought. It is from the thought again. It has come back through the back door. The thought is still active behind, in the background. Who wants to know? The thought wants to know. Unless you can understand what Jay Krishnamurti said about the limitation of thought, you will continue to use thought. Unless you can understand the danger of how thought divides and creates duality through concept and words, you will never stop using thought. To you, thought is so beautiful, so useful and wonderful. But thought has its purpose and its place. Because to come to this existential world, to live life, you need thought. Thought is an instrument for communication, for expression, for learning, the technical thing, the arts, the science, etc. But when it comes to psychological memories and emotion, you cannot use thought because it is a waste of energy. Energy gets dissipated amazingly fast through thought. It will create stress, emotion, and negativity of mind state. So thought has its purpose, and thought is respond to memory. It has its purpose, but not to apply it to psychological problems. Psychological problem needs wisdom or Dhamma medicine. But to study technical subject, science subject, mathematical subject, IT, information technology, AI, and everything else, you need to have thought. Without thought, the logical mind cannot function. And the logical mind need to think. You must think with clarity. That is why the four bases of success will ensure mundane success. Do you know how to develop them? The first base is passion. Means for mundane success, four bases of success. Passion, or in Pali, is called chanda. So for you to be successful in whatever you do or you want to excel in, you must have the passion to do it, to understand it. Then you go all out to do it, and that is virya. Strong tenacity or zeal to do. Then chitta, the willpower to drive you to succeed. That one you need thought. You use thought. Then finally, to investigate. The investigation part, vimamsa, to continuously review and improve. So understanding all this is not easy. That is why when I started to come out to share and teach, I realize that traditional Dhamma commonly taught is extremely limited and very dogmatic. They cannot explain all. They cannot expand into all this to develop the understanding. So that is the reason why I knew they will fail, because I understood acting according to memory or acting according to sutta knowledge, thought-based knowledge, is not acting at all. You need to develop insight, wisdom, and awaken to act. Then only you can penetrate all this. And to penetrate all this is not easy, because you need the silent mind. And this silent mind is understanding. I have been trying to teach for so long. Only recently, in the last few years, it started to take shape and bear fruits. Then, like what you mentioned, last time you still cannot understand all this because a lot of your question came from the thought. And basically, those thought processes arise from the mundane mind, which is still deluded, hence limited and egoic. You cannot differentiate between the two minds and develop that clear understanding, then you cannot free. So for you, this understanding is incredibly good. But do reflect, contemplate, and realize the big difference between the mundane mind and the true mind. You must have a clear understanding of these two minds. Otherwise, you will continue to fall back to the mundane mind. Like you say, habitual tendency, deep-rooted habitual tendency, which recently you have come to realize, which you came to realize. It's not easy to root out all this habitual tendency. You must combine what I have shared with you with Jay Krishnamurti's teaching. It is very good of Krishnamurti or Jay Krishnamurti to point out that thought is limited, but he didn't go into the details to explain it. I have explained it to you what thought is. Basically, when you are with the true mind, it is just spacious awareness where there is no content of consciousness yet. That is why thought cannot arise. There is just awareness. But when you use your memory to perceive, then perception brings in the external form. Then your views, opinion, and conditioning enables your content of consciousness to go in. Then it creates a thought. Obviously, that thought is limited, because whatever you perceive, or whenever you perceive something, you have to shrink that pure awareness or consciousness into that limited or narrow space or field. Like this Buddha image, which you perceive, you zoom into that. Then the content of consciousness, which is mainly your views, opinion, and conditioning, and comments, etc., comes in. Then it becomes a thought. So that is why thought is limited. And that thought is egoic, because it comes from delusion. So that is the reason why, not until you are enlightened, you do not know how to use thought. That's why the user of thought is particularly important. When the user of thought has Dhamma, has wisdom, then thought becomes right thought, wholesome thought, beautiful thought. Then you can use thought. Then thought becomes your friend, a tool to serve you. No more problem. Otherwise, it will condition attachment, craving, clinging, grasping, and self-delusion, sakayaditi. Then you will always revert to thought, because that is the only instrument that deluded human being understand. So see all this clearly, understand all this clearly, then you will never revert to use thought to deal with your psychological problems. Then you will know why thought has its place in life, in society, and not in the psychological world. Not for Dhamma awakening and understanding, not for cultivation. When it comes to cultivation, you must realize the truth, which is beyond thought, beyond mind. So you must understand all this very clearly. Then only you can and the true penetrative clarity and understanding to cultivate accordingly. With all this explanation, I hope you all can understand. It is not easy to understand this teaching, where it is not what you think. So this is incredibly beautiful. Brother, thank you so much for bringing out all this condition for my nature to explain all this. This part is difficult to understand and very profound, but slowly. There is condition already, because otherwise the sharing will not have all this clear and profound understanding that I just shared. To recap, this is for you to understand clearly why the mundane mind is egoic and has its limitation. Why is it limited and why is it egoic? Why you cannot use it to cultivate Dhamma and apply it to solve your life problem, especially psychological problem. When you act according to memory, you are not acting at all, because you are not acting based on understanding or wisdom. Wait, I read again. When you act according to memory, you are not acting according to understanding or wisdom. Mainly because you do not have Yoniso Manasikara yet. Yeah, the initial wisdom. Then your whole cultivation will go haywire. That's why people tend to always use their intellect, Dhamma knowledge, to try to practice Dhamma. You can't. So all this understanding, you must truly clear. So all this understanding will become truly clear when you cultivate correctly from the self nature. Okay, well, so salute to you. Okay, we stop here, page 46. So wait, I just finish it. Brother Song say yes, sadhu productive. So we stop here. 3.2.10. Because it's already 4:04. We all have our 45 minutes of silent awareness based meditation. Okay. So page 46, I will mark the page and I will off the light. Then you can have your 45 minutes of awareness-based meditation. We will continue with our second session, which is reporting on meditation.
Actually, I feel that today's sharing was pretty good, you know, because somehow I have this question this morning. I was having these questions on, like you say, having these two mind, right?
Yes.
That one is the mundane mind, another one is the true mind. And then we are so used to use the mundane mind to live our life.
Correct.
But yeah, and then my question actually is like, how do Brother Teo, when Varajyo associate with the true mind, how Varajyo able to, you know, start to use the true mind to live life. But somehow today's talk was a bit about this.
Because
it's really like, you know, we are so used to our mundane mind. Like how to to change this, you know, habit to use the true mind.
Very good.
Yeah.
Okay, I will answer
my question
that.
Is
I will answer that first. Thank you so much for that.
Thank you,
friend. Sister Sandy. So this is a natural inquiry that will arise, because before you understand, you will use your thought process to try to reason. If there is a true mind, why can't I use that true mind to meditate, to live life, to understand things, and to do all the beautiful things? So the question is very important and very relevant. But before you really develop the ability to realize a true mind, this question cannot be understood. Because it will remain a thought-based question. But at least the person who come up with this has the initial clarity that this is interesting. If there is two mind, and like Brother Teo point out, Most human beings, sentient beings, we always only familiar with the mundane mind, the thinking mind, the conditionalizing mind, the dependent originating mind. Whereas this mind that thinks a lot, chatters a lot, that do all these worldly activities, that arises the aggregates of mind and all those things. So it is very difficult not to use this mind, because since birth until now, most living beings are only familiar with this thinking mind, mundane mind. And unless you are a cultivator, you are a Dharma practitioner who has the understanding and ability to develop the stability of mindfulness and silence within, to realize that true mind, there is no way you can live with that mind. That's why ability to realize that mind is just the beginning. Then after that, ability to stabilize it and be with that true mind, which is most of the time aware and without thought, is another thing. So these stages of cultivation or understanding is very important. That's why the question that Tammy asked is very beautiful. And I remember in certain period of my sharing on various occasions, I have explained this before. The early days, I used the word heedful living as again heedless living. To develop the ability to have heedful living, you must have this stability of mindfulness. That's why you look at the Abhijja Sutta, right? The way I explain it and share it with you all. The 10 steps within the Abhijja Sutta that leads to enlightenment. You have to go through them, then you will understand the cultivation. The first 3 is very important and easier to realize. First is to have Dhamma friends. Of course, most of you have. You all fulfill this kayamita. And having Dhamma friends will give you opportunity to hear the true Dhamma, which all of you have. Then when you have the opportunity to hear the true Dhamma, if you cultivate, constantly listen to it, reflect, contemplate, and put it into practice, then you will progress. As you progress, you will be able to understand the essential Dhamma clearer and clearer. Then you will reach a stage where your faith becomes very strong, where all these Dhamma stand up to investigation, and they are very beautiful. So the 3rd step, which is faith in the Buddha Dhamma and the Sangha, will be there. Yeah. And after that, you have to move into step 4. Step 4 is sati sampajaya. Oh, sorry, yoniso manasikara. So this step 4 is a cultivation. When you develop the initial cultivation, means first turning, listen, reflect, contemplate, second turning, then you put into practice bhavana maya panya, you realize the truth and awaken, then it will give rise to some form of wisdom. The first and second turning is normally the initial wisdom, which are not powerful enough or potent enough to trigger off very strong awakening. And most people who has cultivated from the past before, they will have this ability through first and second turning to awaken, where they connect back and they recall the understanding. But for ordinary Puttijana or cultivator who don't have the luxury or the past, then they have to put in the hard work, extra hard work to cultivate. Then finally, through the 3rd turning, to insight into phenomena and to awaken. Then that 3rd turning wisdom is very strong, very powerful. It's only after you have stabilized all this wisdom or the first, second turning especially, then moving into the third turning. The third turning, once triggered off, will be very powerful, very strong. So once this initial wisdom is there, you become different. You will not have the wrong view or delusion to react to sense experience like before. A lot of things you would have developed the understanding. Sabbe sankara anicang, sabbe sankara dukkang, sabbe dhamma anatta, all these things will become clear to you. Then as you live life, as you are interacting with life in the midst of society, your senses are active. Every moment of sense experience, whether you see something, hear something, smell, taste, tactile, feel, or think of something. The mundane mind that doesn't have the wisdom or the unisok manasikara, they will stir, they will react. The habitual tendency or the conditioning, the views, the opinion will surface. That's why the mundane mind think a lot, heedless. It will trigger off wrong thought, conditioned by the evil roots of greed, hatred, and delusion. But once the initial wisdom is there, the unisok manasikara is there, then at the moment of sense experience, something else happens. That Dhamma that you have, the initial wisdom that you have, will spontaneously arise and let the form and mind know. Sankara anicang, sankara dukkang. Or the other type of Dhamma. Like the Buddha said, whatever that arise, there are causes and conditions behind. Everything is just the way it is, sitting as they are, suchness and all those things. People are just the way they are, the world is the world. Then you can be at peace in most situations. Then like all the Dhamma that I share with you all, no amount of fear, worry, anxiety can help you solve your problem. This is your root. You have to develop the spiritual faculty, stabilize it so that the five mental hindrances, the opposite five, can be rooted out and overcome. So all this understanding will come in and help you to develop the stability of mind that does not stir and react to sense experience like before. So most of the time, you will be at peace. Then you will have more and more moment of peacefulness, or we call silent between thought. That's why from the initial wisdom, which is step four, this unisok manasikara will bring about step five, which is sati sampajana, mindfulness and clear comprehension. This stability of mindfulness and clear comprehension can only arise when there is initial wisdom. Otherwise, the mind keep on stirring, reacting with the habitual tendency and creating all the mental hindrance, the evil roots, the wrong thought, that condition your fear, worry, anxiety, sorrow, and lamentation, insecurity. So all this, if you are not mindful, not aware, you cannot see, you cannot understand, you cannot develop the wisdom, you cannot see the universal characteristic, you cannot see that the form and mind is subject to the three universal characteristics. They are dependent, originating, conditioned, arising, causal phenomenon, not a permanent unchanging entity. So all this understanding cannot come up about. That's why without sati, without the true mind, you cannot meditate, you cannot awaken. The initial wisdom is not there. And because it's not there, you cannot have moment of peace, silence or stillness, or tranquility of mind. So the silent mind, which is the true mind, is also the meditative mind. when the spiritual faculties are there, the mental hindrance is gone. So most of the time, you are aware, without thought, at peace. That's why sati, with clear comprehension, is there. Once you have this sati, sampajana develop until very stable, then your mindfulness can help you to see a lot of things and understand a lot of things. Then by the time your wisdom stabilizes, it will move on to step 6. Sense restraint means, like Hui Ning say, the mind ground cannot have this type of evil result, greed, hatred, and delusion, right? The sense restraint is there. You know this is not right. This is wrong. These are evil, root of all evil, cause your downfall. You undertake the training rule to keep your precept, everything. So these are the Dhamma way, the wisdom way, the understanding. So this step 6, sense restraint become automatic, which means you are moving over from being a Puttajana into a heedful sentient being that has the Dhamma, the wisdom. So as you develop step 6 until very stable, then step 7 become natural consequence of step 6, the three-way of right conduct, where you are incapable of evil, where you can have the three types of sense restraint, means right thought, right speech, and right action, then you are incapable of evil, which means the three types of right conduct, which is right thought, right speech, and right action, will arise. By then, at step 7, you are at least a sotapan, or if you have cleared or attenuated the 4th and the 5th fetters, then you become a sakadagami, second stage of sainthood. That's how the 10th step of the Abhijja Sutta progresses. Then from step 7, you will know how to move to step 8, which is cultivation of the 4 foundation of mindfulness that will lead to the enlightenment and the awakening, the 3rd stage of sainthood and the 4th stage of... That's why the Satipatthana Sutta, the 4 foundation of mindfulness, the final summary the Buddha mentioned, if you have done this in accordance with the 4 foundation of mindfulness as taught by him, you will realize at least anagami, if there is still a little bit of self-conceit or monarch or ignorant. Otherwise, you will definitely become an arahant. That's why once step 8 is being done, you will start to realize step 9, which is the 7 stages of enlightenment. Satta Bhujanga, they keep on arising. Then you know you are on the right path. You are destined for enlightenment. These are enlightenment factors. So you go through your cultivation this way, then your mind will transform. Once your mind transforms, you become more and more mindful, more and more heedful throughout the day. That's why you hardly think. You are just most of the time aware, either specific phenomenal awareness or spacious awareness without thought. You only use thought when you need it. Then you need to understand things, study things, explain things, share something to live life. Apart from that, all the unnecessary thinking, reasoning, you will not waste time. You only reflect, contemplate. Then most of the time, you are at peace. That is how the true mind can live life through specific phenomenal awareness. Most of the time it's aware, either specific phenomenal awareness or spacious awareness without a thought. Means the mind is without a center. It is not aware of anything. It's not following phenomena. It's just silent completely without a center. That's why it becomes the oneness, the spacious awareness without a center. So these two They will oscillate between the enlightened beings who has transformed. This is heedful living. This is living life with the true mind, the silent mind. Yeah. The other one is the sainthood way. At the sainthood way, it is not so stable. Even Arahant. At the Arahant, there is still outflow. Outflow of the birth and death of thought process. That fire aggregate of form and mind is still arising and passing away. So for the sainthood way and the Arahant way, their mundane mind hasn't collapsed. But the Arahant and the sainthood who has gone through this will have less sankhara because of the wisdom, depending on the factors. So they will get themselves entangled less and less, less and less, less and less. Then they can also live life, although they cannot stop the thought from arising. But they can realize Nibbana. First stage of sainthood and second stage of sainthood, you can go through what they call a glimpse of Nibbana. A very short cessation, just a glimpse. Then they awaken, they know what this thing is really. Then the path and friction, path and friction. Then after that, anagami, when you realize anagami, is more stable. Because the anagami has actually completely ruled out the first five fetters. And most of this anagami, their mind is already very stable. Very, very stable. Except on very rare occasion, the minor conceit, the restlessness of mind, and a little bit of ignorance, they can still come in and cause them some slight problem. There are some who still like the experience of the form jhana and the formless jhana. They were attached, they will stay there for a while. But apart from that, they have longer period of cessation. They know what that nibbana experience is. They can go into that cessation for longer period. And once you reach an arahant, you can experience it for longer period. But after they come out, the five aggregate of form and mind will come back, mundane mind will come back. And because the mundane mind hasn't collapsed, they will be able to live with it because the wisdom connected to the form and mind will enable them not to be deluded or deceived by this mundane mind. So these are the two possibilities. One is when you are still at the sainthood way or you reach arahantship, the mundane mind haven't collapsed. There is also heedful living, but not so stable. You are not like the bodhisattvas who has already cleared certain stages of cultivation. And there are some, the mundane mind has already collapsed. And once the mundane mind collapsed, the pure awareness, nature, that true mind will shine forth. It's like the sky becomes clear because there is no more cloud to cloud it. The sun's rays shine forth. So for our nature, our true mind or our true nature, it is similar. When the mundane mind collapses, it's like the cloud that clouds the nature gone, dispersed. Then this nature awareness shine forth. Then that true mind always manifests. That's why that type of being is very rare. Very, very rare. Then for them, heedful living is very easy. Because most of the time, their mind is without the mundane mind. Nothing to cloud them. They are always aware. Most of the time, it's aware. But then there is a super mundane mind, very fine, like no mind inside that. Because to live life, you need that type of mind. So this super mundane mind will surface. Then like I explained before, initially I have to learn to use it because this is something new. That's why I told my wife after my medical left for 3 days or 4 days, I was amazed. How come the nature is like that? Everything within nature, within life. Last time, everything was still the same, but I can't see. But once the mundane mind collapse, everything becomes so clear. The characteristic, anicchang, dukkhang, anatta, they are everywhere, every moment, every instant. That all of the movement, activity, the flow of nature, specific phenomenal awareness, spacious awareness, everything, the oneness, everything become very clear. That's why I was so amazed. How come last night I cannot see, now can see? Now everything is so clear. It's because the mundane mind has collapsed. And for the mundane mind to collapse, it's not easy. You must have your past cultivation. Otherwise, this is not going to be easy. So coming back to answer your question, Tammy, I have already explained the two possibilities. One is the sainthood way leading to Arahantship, who cultivate according to the teaching, the 10th step of the Avijja Sutra, they were rich, maybe most of the steps, except their wisdom and their perfection of wisdom leading to that stability has not reached the stages of training that the Bodhisattva do. The three hallmark of training. The first hallmark of no thought. The sainthood way and the arahatship way, they can realize that. But to go beyond no thought, to reach the higher wisdom, the stability of wisdom leading to no mark, no mark of a self, no mark of others, and no mark of Dhamma in life, that one is not easy. That one, you have to go the Bodhisattva way. Then if you go the Bodhisattva way, when you develop stability of wisdom, understanding, and transformation, especially perfection of wisdom, stability of awareness, then you will penetrate no mark very clearly. Because at the same way, even Arahantship way, only the no mark of a self and no mark of others become very clear. Especially at Arahant way, become very, very clear. That no mark is not really easy. You may be a Sakadagami, Sotapan. That means the first three fetter gone. Self, delusion, the egoic mind. You know that one is not real. But that one doesn't mean you understand the true meaning of no mark of a self and no mark of others. You may understand to a certain extent, but not complete. Then the third type of noma, which is noma of Dhamma, noma of life, noma of everything else. That one is not easy. That one even the Arahant may not understand. Yeah. But you don't need that one to become an Arahant. Yeah. You only need the first noma. Yeah. Noma of self, then automatically by induction, you will know no mark of others. But not the penetrative stability of understanding yet. But once you hit the full realization of no mark of Dhamma, no mark of life, existence, and of those things, then your penetrative wisdom and stability of that wisdom will carry you forward to a stage where your mundane mind will collapse. Then when your mundane mind collapses only, you can realize the third hallmark of winning. The mind will have no dwelling. Because the mundane mind dwells everywhere. The mundane mind, as long as he has not ceased, he will dwell everywhere. So without wisdom, you will have problem with this mundane mind. But once you have perfected the second hallmark of winning, completed it, then the third hallmark will surface when your mundane mind collapses. Once your mundane mind collapses, then you will not dwell, because this one is already the supramundane mind, no more the mundane mind. Your wisdom is already so stable, it cannot hold, it cannot grasp, and naturally it's like that. That's why they call it the true suchness. It's just that nature, aware. It doesn't dwell. Either it's in specific phenomenal awareness or spacious awareness without a center. It cannot, like the grasping aggregate, go and dwell, go and cling, go and hold on to Dhamma and all those things. It can't. So that phase is very rare, very, very rare. But those who achieve that third hallmark can really, truly live up to the fullest. And they can really be heedful throughout the day and night, away. So that hopefully will explain the question that you brought up just now, huh, Tammy? Yeah. So hope you can benefit from it.
Yeah, thank you, Brother Teo.
Yeah.
It's really very good explanation. It's like, you know, at first I thought, you know, I have an idea how you will reply, you know, but
yeah,
somehow
yeah.
You take me out from the, like, from the start, from step
yeah,
by
yeah,
step,
yeah.
And then
yeah.
until
the whole cultivation
yeah.
process, yeah. And how
yeah,
it can happen. So this one will help a lot of cultivator as they go through all this. That's why the cultivation is technically unending. There's a lot of things involved. It keep on arising. It keep on transforming. So what you have asked is very good. It gives rise to very good condition for my nature to share. Like I say, if you don't ask, this thing will not come out. There is no condition for my nature to share. But once I share, because we have the website is recorded, people will benefit. In the future, those who progress further, they listen to this, they will understand how beautiful this teaching is and how wonderful when your mind transforms, when you are able to go through all those experiences. Then you realize, yeah, you can live life with the true mind, the silent mind. You can stay with it and most of the time aware and heedful throughout the day. That's why heedfulness is very important. Ever mindful, constantly meditating. So you can develop that quality of mind, like the Buddha said, you are destined for enlightenment. The heedful never die. Heedfulness is the path to the deathless. Then all this Dhammapada saying become very meaningful, very beautiful, and so clear. That's why for those who understand, the teaching is so clear. Then they look at sentient being, living being. They really have compassion, very pitiful. We have this sentient being or Putujana, they are still so full of delusion, ignorant. They cannot understand all this. Yet if they understand, they will not live their life that way. It's because of their lack of understanding. That's why they continue to be heedless. I won't use the word they dare to be heedless, because they don't know that they are heedless. That's why I use the word they continue to be heedless. They don't understand this teaching. Whoever who understands this teaching will not go that way. It is so clear. One leads to suffering, misery, affliction. The other one transforms your life and make you so beautiful. You become like an Arya, an enlightened being who has the understanding. And life becomes so different. Take a turn, it becomes so meaningful, so wonderful, and you can avoid all ill, cultivate merit, wholesomeness, and develop your good parami so that you have the good life, the good karmic inheritance that can give you the beautiful life. Then after that, when you have the wisdom, you no longer suffer. You can live life to the fullest. Get to experience all of the pristine beauty and wonders of life. Then life becomes very different, very meaningful, very wonderful. And you just have joy, have understanding, and you just accord and flow, fulfill your vow, and be a blessing to all. And this is what Dhamma cultivation is all about. So beautiful. Okay?
Yeah, actually, I also want to comment something because the other day while I was listening your talk on the way to my mom's house, then one time you explained that you say it's very amazing that we are living in this current era where actually you have said many a few times, yes, but I don't understand. You know, but today you say that you see we have this election, then we experienced the tsunami, we experienced MCO and everything. I feel that I listen carefully to how you describe your understanding. Then it's like you say tsunami, and for most people they will think that tsunami is a very bad thing to happen, you know. And you say that it's amazing. So it seems to me like really what you say that you see the world somehow
karmic, because of karmic law of karma, this become possible, and how it arise, and how you get to experience all this. Well, I mentioned the last 40 years is actually great transformation for our civilization. Our recorded civilization is 5,000 over years, but we were still very backward, even about 40, 50 years ago. The last 40 years, the way we progress, you look at how sophisticated civilization has become. Even technology revolution has transformed so much things. First, we had the early years of what they call primitive, simple life. Everything's still very backward. No water supply, no electricity, nothing. Science and technology, very backward. Then there is a need for agriculture product. So we have the agriculture revolution, we break free. Then later on they realize not enough job, too many people. Because when medical science improves, less and less death, then they come up with the industrial revolution that provided a lot of job. But the industrial revolution led to a lot of pollution, a lot of environmental destruction. So after that, they have to come up with the mitigation, that's like public health engineering, green energy, pollution control, which is what civilization is doing. And later on, they realize a lot of things that has been done in the world, like the banking, the commerce, everything, is still very backward, very primitive, very slow. That's why they come out with IT revolution, the internet revolution. Then we have, after that, the information technology, speed of data, transmission, everything. Then from there, it conditioned AI, artificial intelligence. A lot of things can be done now with the technological boom and understanding. Then you look at how sophisticated our civilization has become. During the early years when I was young, the TV is like a luxury. Black and white also like a luxury. Then later on, when I graduated, I think the late 70s and the 80s, color TV appeared. Then it become no more a luxury to own a color TV. Then from color TV, later on we have computers. I remember 1985, 86, I bought my first computer for my children. Then after the computer came the Nokia handphone. Oh, that time SMS also very happy already. But later on, the iPhone, the smartphone, like now, you have all the possibility of very sophisticated IT capability within your handphone. And in the past, all the mini computers, the whatever IBM computer, they are like dinosaur, giant, big size and all things. Computing power very slow. But now, the normal, what they call tabletop, can be very, very powerful. The storage, everything, and the speed, the processor. So, then even now, you can buy laptop, and even, 所以你用的这个叫什么? No, no. Ah, tablet. So sophisticated. Then the handphone becomes so sophisticated. So you look at the way things transform. Then transportation, the airline, the delivery of goods, cargo, high-speed rail. Everything moves very fast. That's why technology can actually change the world. Then this is only the thought-based, knowledge-based civilization evolution. The world must balance it with the spiritual understanding. That's why the spiritual consciousness must catch up. Otherwise, the world will go into self-destruction. So you must have more and more people with spiritual understanding to come and balance back the technology revolution. Because all this science and technology are based on thought. So the thought-based revolution has taken off at a very high speed. Too fast. Spiritual understanding has lagged behind. That's why you need people, the special beings that are born into this world with technical capability and understanding to balance all this. It's just like me. When I came, I somehow know when I was in Senate 2 very young, I want to become a civil engineer. Nobody taught me, nobody tell me. And I like this field because it let me understand a lot of things about technology and all those things. Then I can understand the spiritual aspect. That's why I can balance back this thing and share this teaching. And all this become possible. And that is the reason why Maitreya in the year 2008 chose my nature to request my nature to come out and share all these beautiful teachings. So all this show to you a very clear and elaborative happening. That's why we are in the special era, golden era. I was born after World War II, the transition period, before and after. I saw the earlier, I should say, relatively still quite primitive type of civilization. At that time when I was born, there was no public utility, like water. We still get well water at that time. Electricity hasn't really been popular. So a lot of underdeveloped country or even developing country is only after the 60s, then only you start to see all these things. So we were witnessed beautifully. We are, after that, after the World War II, 1941-42. I was born 12 years later. So by then, the world has stabilized. Education has become much more improved. That's why I have good education. My father sent me to an English school with very good education facilities and syllabus and all those things. So I had a very good education, and because of my past, I able to excel, and I have the luxury of seeing all these stages of civilization evolution. From the 60s, I went to school, then I saw. Then when I went to university, 75 to 79, when I graduated, that time, our country, developing country, take off. First Malaysia Plan, second Malaysia Plan. Then when I graduated as a civil engineer, a lot of jobs. Not enough engineers. Then after that, I witnessed the 80s. Well, 80s, things start to change. Color TV, computer, everything come. Then the 90s, more sophisticated. After my daughter was born in the 80s, they came with the computer and information technology. Then they call them the what generation? X. You are the X or Y or X?
The borderline X.
Oh, borderline X and Y, yeah. We are the baby boomer. Then my daughter is a millennium. They call it the millennium. Before the X and Y, and now the Z generation. Now, every 10 years, I think, they have one generation of the new definition of the kids. The things are changing very fast. So, if you really have the Dhamma, you can see all this, experience all this, and understand all this. That's why I have a lot of joy. I always call this the golden era, that we are very, very blessed, very fortunate to be able to witness all this is one thing. Be successful in life, I have the means to experience them and live it. That's why you must have this ability to thank your good karma, to appreciate the good karmic inheritance that we have. We are not only born a human, we are born within the Buddha Sasana. And we go through this beautiful phase of golden era. What else do you want from life? So meaningful, so beautiful. And when I was at the prime of my age and my career, and even after I retire, I was able to witness all this and live it. And really have the joy to understand all this. Instead of like normal human being, worry about life, argue over life, complaining about life, then worry about this, worry about that. Then like non-stop problem like everywhere. Pandemic also panic, worry about COVID and all those things. They hardly live life. So for people without the Dhamma, that is what they will go through. But for us who has the Dhamma, we not only live, we experience fully what is possible. And we have a lot of joy, a lot of gratitude, a lot of understanding. That's why all this can become so beautiful. It's the way you understand it, the way you perceive it, and the way you look at it. Okay, Tammy, salute to you for creating such good condition for all this to be shared. Well, now I describe in more detail.
I thank you for your detailed explanation. It's very, I don't know, it's today when I listen to the 10 steps, and this one is a bit, it's rather different from
can understand, right? You can follow already. It has become clear.
I can a bit relate.
Relate to real life, the real happening, real cultivation.
Yeah, maybe I talk a little bit about my own cultivation a bit,
very good.
Say it a few times already, I say that my heart here, I know, that day I remember I told you that the chest area, then I get, I feel more relaxed, and then I can breathe well, and then I felt that somehow that thought become that experience becomes a thought, you know, it's like then I kind of like hold it on it. Then it becomes like it cannot solve the problem again. You know?
Then you are trying to use thought to analyze, to reason. You didn't follow the instruction, relax, maintain awareness, don't try to know. You do that, it become very different again.
Yeah. So when I then I do not know why, you know, or some how to say it, last time when I drive and anything, I don't have this kind of fear. But this time I do not know why it's like a fear was keep on arising, you know. Then at first I was a bit like don't know what to do. Then somehow it created a lot of opportunity for me to be aware, you know.
Yes.
When the awareness arrives, then the fear will become like it's not so personalized.
Then once you understand, it does not trigger off further, it does not affect you so much like earlier on, because fear is a emotion that is born of lack of understanding, fear of the unknown, fear of something, whatever, you can trace back to fear. That's why restlessness can also be traced back to fear, anxiety to fear of something happening. Otherwise, you won't have all this mind state, the mental hindrance, everything. So fear is the root. So how did fear arise? You must trace the origination factor. Without thought, you are peaceful. You are just aware. You understand? Because thought is response to memory. From memory, the conditioning arises. So fear comes from memory. When you don't have wisdom, when you don't have Dhamma, your scars of memory will trigger off fear. Your insecurity, your lack of understanding of things, when things don't go your way, it trigger off fear, worry, anxiety. So you realize thought is very, very problematic when you don't know how to arise the right thought, which is free of the evil roots. And the evil roots of fear is delusion. Without delusion, there is no fear. Then because of delusion of fear, there is greed and hatred, attachment, craving, for me or not for me, positive and negative. So all this you will start to see. That's why you are going through a phase which is very good, like you say. This fear trigger off the condition to make you more aware. You determine to be more aware. When you are more aware and you don't think, like I say, be with it, then all the fear subside. All the whatever anger, emotion subside. The third way, you remember? The five way to overcome unwholesome thought. The third way is meditative, silent, aware. Stay with it. Then without thought, it ceases. Then you come to know all this fear, worry, anxiety, anger, hatred, emotion, they are not intrinsic. They are dependent originating due to your wrong view. Otherwise, they won't arise. That is an awakening. That understanding will suddenly like trigger off your consciousness, your awareness from within. Oh, so beautiful. If anger is not me, fear is not me, then why I worry? Why I arise it? I only need to straighten my view. Then through the fourth way, trace the origination factor, straighten your view, retrospectively reverse it. Then you root out fear. You root out anger. You root out emotion. This is Satipatthana, the fourth foundation of mindfulness. Through awareness, you understand, then you straighten your view. That's what Dhamma is. So this is beautiful, eh? Let me start to see you.
Yeah, now it's still on the way.
but at least clearer. At least now you know you are going through this phase. And they are all connected. My explanation today, you go back and listen to it again, you will move another level. Because these are the Dhamma that is connected to the cultivation. And you, by your good parami, somehow the condition starts to appear. You realize you have progressed actually quite fast recently. Recently, after you had the faith and after you changed the way you do your meditation and understand all these things, because you listen. The constant listening to the Dhamma actually bring forth the transformation, the understanding. Because when you constantly listen with faith, the understanding will come. You will pick up the Dhamma that you didn't pick up. Like just now you mentioned, the 10th step of Vijayasutra, this time I describe it, it like very different to you already. Like you can relate to it better and you can understand it better. And it's no more like last time, blah, blah, mong cha cha, don't know what it is, you got to go and check. So all this has become clear and it will help you and help a lot of other kayanitas. You will give them faith. Very good, Sadhu. Tell me.
Thank you. Oh yeah. Yeah, basically it's like that, like my sharing. So thank you, PG, for nominating.
Yeah, nominating you. You should thank PG, Sadhu. So let us rejoice in the good sharing by Tammy and the good progress also. Sadhu. Sadhu. Sadhu.
Lately all the how you call that Dharma sharing, all tied to the ego, you know. I
found
about ego.
Sadhu, so the ego is
and habitual tendency,
yes,
you know.
Yes, yes.
Because of habitual tendency, the mind always, the mundane mind always do the same
thing.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah. Repetitive. Yeah.
Yeah. So and then also tied to the urgency to cultivate about that.
Yes.
So
yes.
Yeah. So and then recently I also contemplated on the death, the ego and the habitual tendency, all these things, you know. Yeah. Mm. And in the past weeks and months, actually I do a lot more daily mindfulness.
Oh, so
in the midst of life.
Yeah,
and,
that one will be very
actually,
beautiful.
I tie my awareness to my body as well as my feeling.
Yeah,
this two, very good. Yeah, these
yeah.
two. So from there, actually, I observe a lot of things, you know.
Yeah, yeah,
about
you
the
will.
Habitual
you
tendency.
Will. Yes, yes.
About the ego.
Yes,
you know?
Yes.
And the thing is, because of my my last 1 year cultivation, right?
Yes, yes.
But it's no longer like in the past, you know, that you were stirred immediately.
Yes.
No more that, no.
Correct.
You just know and then
you
will just
you will go to, then it was this.
Yes,
it
was
the moment you're aware, the understanding is so stable, it was this. It's no longer like before.
Yes. Correct. No longer like before that you were stir and you do all sorts of stupid things and funny things, you know.
Correct.
So you just see and then you know that this is the mundane mind that will entangle if you go and do funny things.
Correct.
You know? So you know this thing will surface, you know, and then not laugh lah, but you find it so funny, you know.
Yeah.
So
you
funny.
Will like smile and you will know that
to
this
me,
is
like,
now sentient being who don't have the Dhamma will live their life. They are heedless. They think a lot. And they argue a lot, and they very capable one, comment a lot, so like very heedless. So a lot of chattering in their mind, non-stop. So this is how the way of mundane living can create suffering and affliction, then accumulate more and more karmic activity. So wrong thought leading to all the affliction, suffering, and misery, and the five mental hindrance that condition all this become very clear to the cultivator. That's why you will see all this very clearly. Then to you, it's like there is compassion. How come living beings cannot see? Because their karma, their condition at that time, they are just the way they are. So you will have the understanding that sometimes the compassion becomes stronger and stronger. Then you make aspiration. How nice if living beings can have the understanding of this Dhamma. That's why you were determined to go into the Bodhisattva vow to take across more and more beings. All the countless sentient beings within the entire existence. So when this vow is being strengthened, then you determine to cultivate until you have that stability or understanding to teach and to share and to bring about the possibility of getting more and more living beings to actually liberate their mind, understand the Dhamma and move. So all this become possible. Sadhu to you, for having this ability to now develop the cultivation in a more, a more comprehensive manner. But you mentioned just now your focus is stabilizing your daily mindfulness. You use your kaya to anchor and your feeling to anchor. These are the first two foundations. Kaya nupassana and vedana nupassana. And from here, like you say, it will enable you to develop the understanding of your habitual tendency and defilement. Your kaya nupassana will stabilize your daily mindfulness and allow you to see things very clearly. Then when you are sensitive with the mindfulness, you stay with your feeling. Now it's no longer like heedlessly move. That feeling will trigger. Your feeling, like the Buddha say, is most of the time pleasant and unpleasant. That's why you see your habitual tendency, the stirring of the mind and all those things. But later on, you will come to understand like what is being described in the Satipatthana Sutta and the Vedana Nupassana. When feeling arise, the awareness will know. Then when there is pleasant feeling, you're aware. When there is unpleasant feeling, you're aware. So what the Buddha wants you to know is this pleasant and unpleasant feeling, they are your mental hindrance. The first two of the five mental hindrance. So when the mental hindrance is there, it will hinder a person from entering the meditative state of inner peace, inner calmness, and inner... That's why you know people who do this a lot, they cannot meditate because it becomes habitual. So mental hindrance is always there, habitually creating mental hindrance. So how can you meditate? It will hinder your mind. So because of that, you will understand without yoniso manasikara, without straightening of the view and the understanding, this mind will continue to habitually stir and react and create this type of wrong thought, affliction. That's why the way to cultivate is to go reverse it to understanding. So when you are at feeling, you start to see a lot of your habitual tendency, which is very true. That's why you are moving in a beautiful, marvelous condition to understand all this. Very good, watching. Sadhu to you.
Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Right, that is precisely what is happening, you know.
Yeah, I see.
My feeling, positive and negative.
Stirring.
And then I understand my habits, you know. What I like, what I don't like, you know. How can I overcome this, habitual tendency, what we say, observe it and then retrospectively
I finish off this one. This one is very useful. The retrospectively reverse it, actually, that one from Vedana Nupassana, you move to Dhamma Nupassana. When you move to Dhamma Nupassana, the first category of Dhamma that you have to be mindful of is the five mental hindrance. That's why from Vedana, you will come to know that when pleasant sensual desire arise, means pleasant feeling arise, you know, you are aware, means the causes and conditions for its arising. So under the Dhammanupassana, mindfulness of the five aggregate of form and mind. The Buddha teaches very beautifully for you to trace all this. He said, when sensual desire arise, you must be aware. Then when you continue to silence your mind, means to the third category of training under Nupassana, the internal mindfulness or internal six sense bases and external six sense bases. Means this sense door, mindfulness, will enable you to see clearly like what is described under the mindfulness of the five mental hindrance. The Buddha said, if you continue to silence your mind and develop awareness through the sense basis, you can trace the origination factor. Through the senses, it arises. Then the reason why it arises is your wrong view. Then you straighten your view, it will cease to be. Then even through the third way, if the sensual desire, whether positive or negative, the sensual craving or ill will, when they arise, if you silence your mind, it will cease. No more thinking, no more wrong thought, no more delusion, no more feeding it with the thought energy. Then you realize intrinsically that is not within your nature. These are dependent originating states. So because of that, you will come to realize, like the Satipatthana mentioned, you will come to know how the arisen mental hindrance come to be due to your wrong thought is still. Then when you silence your mind and don't do anything, it ceases to be. Then as per the Satipatthana, you will also come to know how the arisen mental hindrance ceases to be. First is how the mental hindrance comes to be, then ceases to be. Then after a while, when your cultivation stabilizes and you understand this with the initial wisdom very clearly, then when it doesn't stir like what you described just now, not like before already, then you will come to know how in the future there will be no more arising of this type of sensual desire or ill will, the mental hindrance. So this is what Satipatthana is all about. How you root out the five mental hindrance. When you have the wisdom, initial wisdom, the understanding developed through the four foundations of mindfulness, all this understanding will arise. Then you will awaken. Then this is the process of rooting out the five mental hindrance. Then when the five mental hindrance is gone, your spiritual faculty automatically fall into place. Then sati sampajana will fall into place. Then after that, the step 6, 7, 8, 9, and 10 of the Abhijja Sutta, they will take off. So all these are very beautiful. So you can continue now.
Sadhu. The way you explain it now is like there is a process that is occurring. But to me, it's like very fast, you know, very fast.
Samuppada is very fast. Yes.
Of course, it's very fast. So when it happened to me, right? So I will be able to observe it, But at the time when I observe, I know what is going on with my mundane mind. I can know where it goes to the six internal and six external sense base already, you know.
Yeah, you can see that.
I can see them already. Then from there, my mind is like, oh my God, this is interesting. I mean, you know, this is dependent originating. It just go away by itself because you don't stir anymore already. Because you are able to see this happening in your so-called awareness.
Form and mind, the awareness within your form and mind, yes.
Yes, correct. You're able to see this, so it just cease to be, and then it will not...
proliferate anymore. It takes a few times after your wisdom stabilize, then suddenly one day you realize, no reaction, nothing already. It means that thing cannot stir already, cannot cause any movement already. miss.
Correct.
Now that also no problem. Otherwise also no problem. You can echo and flow already. Thing is just the way it is. No longer like before. Oh, must be like that. Cannot be like that. That is one thing, things your way, which is not nature's way, and suffering will arise. But when you have the wisdom to accord and flow and understand the reality of the moment, like the Buddha said, everything is just the way it is. Cannot be otherwise. Suchness, ta-ta-ta, the reality. Seeing things as they are. At that moment, condition like that, things will be like that. Then everything will fall into place. Then like my teacher shared with me, you must understand everything is just a flow, nature's flow, condition arising, causal phenomenon. Then mighty nature, only mighty nature rolling by. So all this you will start to understand. Then that wisdom become very powerful. That wisdom allow you to see things as they are and accept the reality of the moment. To do that, you need a lot of wisdom and patience. Patient endurance with wisdom. You must see clearly, reflect, contemplate until very stable. Then all this become possible. Then you will have the benefit of no mark, no mark of a self, no mark of others. Then it root out sacrality. Then the heavier tendency always cease to have any power over you. Then you will know the deep meaning of sabbe sankhara anicchang. Sabbe sankhara dukkhang dhamma anatta. All this become very clear. Then our bodhisattva vow all become very beautiful. And when you recite them, the meaning become very deep and very clear. That's how the bodhisattva progress differently. And the joy that comes with all this style of understanding and cultivation is so beautiful. Very good.
Sadhu, I agree totally. You know, the joy that comes with understanding your phrases, it's really wisdom. You don't need anything but just the phrases will kind of seize a lot of things that is happening, you know. So I find that the phrases that Ratio shared are very, very meaningful.
Yes, very important, you know, very useful. Yes. Yeah, these are the pointer that can transform the living being. Give rise to wisdom and awakening. I always say, remember in cultivation, nothing free except the wisdom. Without wisdom, the affliction, the suffering will not go away. But when there is wisdom, which is understanding, then no more problem, no more issue, then everything ceases. Then all of the Dhamma understanding that you have, they will accumulate and become very complete. They call it the perfection of wisdom understanding. When all these come together, it become a perfect understanding. Then everything just the way it is finished, and the understanding is so beautiful. That's why I can just sit and do nothing, because life is so beautiful. The pristine beauty and wonders of life within every moment, every instant. Every moment of consciousness is so pure, so beautiful.
Yes, right. Now I can more, relate to this pristine beauty. When everything seems to be, this is really the pristine wisdom.
Very pristine, Pristine is wonderful. Originally like that one, the pristine beauty. But people cannot see you. People want the makeup one.
It's only when everything ceases to be, then you feel that you can see the pristine beauty.
Because this is the final emptiness. Final emptiness. Because when everything ceases, it's just like the Buddha say, whatever that arise, they are of the nature to cease. So when you understand that everything, no matter how it move, how it sustains itself, finally it ceases. Means what? No reality. Impermanent. Empty. You want things your way? Suffering. That's why not a permanent, unchanging entity. Because whatever arises, Just like the Buddha said, whatever is of the nature to arise, is of the nature to cease. So when people ask him, after the son passed away in one of the Bodhisattva's life, he explained it very well. He actually burned the body, cremated the body, set out a fire. Then the king happened to be nearby and inquire what happened. So he said somebody burned a dead person. Then he came to the pyre and he asked the Bodhisattva, who is it that you are cremating? He said, my son. Then the king was strange. Like don't believe. Your son, but you never grieve, you never cry. You know, the Bodhisattva's answer was the best. He said, whatever that is of the nature to arise is of the nature to cease. What has been born into this world has already ceased. No amount of sorrow and lamentation can bring back the dead. So why do you cry? Oh, the king was very impressed. He said, oh. He said, what type of understanding is it? This is fantastic. Then the king still don't believe. Maybe as a man, you don't cry, you don't grieve. Then he asked the wife who was nearby, the mother. Again, the same answer. Yeah, they have been cultivating together. So this sentence is very important. Whatever is of the nature to arise is of the nature to cease. So when it comes to relation and all those things, you have to understand this is a conditional. Whatever that has been born into this world will also come to cease. Yeah. So when it ceases, no more meaning. You think also like that, don't think also like that. That's why I say no amount of sorrow and lamentation can change the reality, means can bring back the dead. Why do you grieve over duty, empty nature? This is no mark of a self, no mark of others, no mark of Dhamma. Nothing is real. Everything within the conditioned world is unreal. That's why they say, when wisdom dawns upon a cultivator, their understanding is different. They see things very different. That's why nothing can cause them any more sorrow or lamentation or unhappy emotion or feeling. They can accept the reality of everything. Yeah, they have the wisdom of both sides, the conditioned and the unconditioned. And this is what the profound Dhamma teaching is all about. It's not only about Dhamma, the unconditioned Dhamma. Yeah, that's an empty nature or existence. So like you say, you realize when everything ceases, that is the most pristine, which is true. Yeah, this is what like the Heart Sutta, Kuan Yin Bodhisattva said, when you realize true emptiness, life become wonderful. Sen Kong Miao Yu. Within true emptiness, there is wonderful existence. That's why all this mind, you know, teaching and expression are so beautiful. Okay? Sadhu, Bojeng.
Sadhu. Thank you, Brother Teo, for the explanation and so much joy in listening. Actually, I have a lot of joy in listening to all the Dhamma sharing in the past weeks, you know. I find that so much joy in listening. You know? I also listen a few times sometimes, especially those that really touch my heart, you know. So, and using all the phrases can just cease all your affliction and suffering. You don't have to do anything, you know, Brother Teo. That is the magic, you know, the magic.
Magic of Dhamma.
Yes, the magic of Dhamma. Thank you, Brother Teo. I think it's great.
Thank you. Okay, let us now end the whole thing.